Evening, everyone. But first of all, I would like to thank Philippe for the introduction. But first of all, I want to thank all of you to be here because for me, Redis is a kind of second home, second family. So I really like enjoy your company. So I think I will try not to speak too much in order to leave the floor for a question. And I think it's one of the strengths of our group. And then, of course, I really want to thank you, Fabienne, for having accepted to discuss my my book, because I know how much busy it is at the moment, and I know that you would have loved to speak in French or in Italian, so I appreciate his effort. But it's a real honor for me that Fabienne has accepted, because I think he's one, Philippe already mentioned it, but Fabienne is like one of the most important experts of the political history of Italian sport. And I think we will, so for me, it's important. So why I have decided to write a book on the links between sport and politics in post-World War II Italy. It was 2011. I wanted to do a PhD, and I had to prepare a project, and I wanted to do a topic on Italian sport, but I wanted to be original, of course. So the fascist period was the most studied in general. By the way, as an information, I inform you that on 2022, the Italian Society of Sport History will do a congress dedicated to this topic. So if someone in the audience is interested, you can participate, of course. And then also in that period, two important works on the liberal period were published, one by Domenico Elia and one other by Felice Fabrizio. So despite the fact that if someone wants these two periods can be still studied, there are a lot of research to do on this period, I switched my focus on the Republican period. Moreover, Le Contrôle du Ballon, the book of Fabien Archambault that will be soon translated in Italian, and I wish and I hope it will be translated also in English one day, was yet to be published. But the main reason why I decided to focus on this period was the fact that while I was working at my book a book that is a literary review of the Olympic Games, I wasn't happy enough of the explanation why Italy was not excluded by the 1948 Olympic Games. On the contrary, for example, of Germany and Japan. I wanted to look at the explanation beyond some explanation that were common to read in Italian books, such as the role of the Italian official or the role of the resistance movement that was used to justify the presence of Italy in 1948 Olympic Games. Furthermore, when I was preparing my master thesis, I really enjoy the book of Peter Beck, Scoring for Britain. So my idea was to do something similar. Scoring for Britain is like a studies that on the Foreign Office and FA relationship in the interwar year. And my goal was to do something similar for Italy after the Second World War, like not only related to football but to all sports. this is an aspect that I would like to stress and focus, because I really think that is important even while studying just a single sporting discipline, to be aware of what happened in other sporting discipline, because I think the comparative aspect is always very important. Anyway, my idea was to do something similar. The problem was that in the CONI is the National Italian Olympic Committee, there were only the minutes of the board and of the assembly meetings. There was no correspondence. So this was already a first problem. And even worse was the situation in the Foreign Office archives, because the documents of the Department of the Cultural Affairs, the one which deal with sport, were not available. This apparently unlucky situation was, however, my luck, because has forced me to broader the sources and to look not only at Italian sources, but also at international one, and to enlarge in general the approach. So of course I went to the IOC archives, but especially I think one aspect that was really important was to look also at the International Federation archives. Of course, these are much more problematic compared to IOC, because the majority doesn't have a proper archives, and there are not all are in Lausanne. And then, of course, I look at the political press, at the sporting press, at the official publication of the national federations, and of course to the national archives, to the government archives. So in general, the aim of the book is to answer four main research questions. The first one is how the development of the international activity of Italian sport has been influenced by the international relation. The second, that I have already partially mentioned, was why Italy was not excluded from the 1948 Winter and Summer Olympic Games, although the re-entering of the international sport was not so easy as the memorialistic narrative generally remembered, because if you look at several not historical books on this period, you could read Italy could participate at the Olympics and nothing was more explained. On the contrary, as I will focus and I will mention later, Italy was excluded to some international federation, and Italy had to wait some months and sometimes some years before restart the sports activity with some country. The third question was, has a sport been used as a political tool by the Italian government? And the last question was, do the Italian sporting foreign policy has been aligned to the traditional diplomacy? So I tried to answer this question, and by doing that, I divided the book in three chapters. After a short introduction, focusing the link between sport and international politics, the first chapter has been dedicated to the actors of the Italian foreign policy, sporting foreign policy, and I've found three main categories of actors. I divided the actors in three main categories. The national sport institution, So first of all, the National Olympic Committee, the National Sporting Federation. I look at the Italian IOC members. Of course, I look at their ideology as well, because one aspect that maybe is for those who haven't studied sport in Italy is important to stress is the fact that in Italy, after the war, the main ideology, the main slogan for Italian sport is something that can be translated in English with the word sport to the sport people. So it's a slogan to say we sports organization, we deal with the politics of sport, because during fascism it was the government that control all the sport activity, and so it was a way to maintain the money of Totocalcio, so of the sports lottery, and especially the control of the political decision in sport. But then I look, of course, at the political actors and the government of starting from the government, and one part of the government that is the undersecretary to the president of the government, to the la what in Italian is called sottosegretario alla presidenza del Consiglio dei Ministri, because it was the responsible of the relation with CONI. And what is really interesting on this aspect is that the responsible that for the largest part of the period that I've studied, that is 1943, 1953, so from 1947 until 1952, I think it was Andreotti, that later on will have a very important career in the history of Italy, in political Italy, not only deal with sport. And Andreotti stressed how important was for the Italian government to respect and to defend the rhetoric of sports to the sports people. But he could do that because he had really strong, informal, and important relationship with CONI. So despite an important independence from the formal point of view, from the informal point of view, in this decade, they develop a strong relationship with informal channels. However, political actors, I look, of course, at the government, I look at the Foreign Office, and to the other minister, I look at the presidency of the Republic, I look not too much to the political parties, but I focus a little bit on how the Italian Communist parties through WISP, that was in Italy we call Ente di Promozione Sportiva, but was an organization, a sports organization, collateral to the Italian Communist Party, and at the beginning linked also to the Italian Socialist Party. So how WISP had a sporting politics also at international level, which was concurrent to the CONI one. So it was WISP that maintain some relationship with the Eastern country once the Cold War started, for example. And then also I look briefly at the role of the Pope and the Vatican, which was, however, not. No, which was quite important in the process of re-legitimation of Italian sport. The third category is the sporting actor. So I looked, of course, as the athletes, as unaware ambassadors, as symbols, but also look at the role of coaches and referee. Of course, when I speak about this, this topic, I always look at their international activities, not to their internal activities. And also the role of the economic actors, such as the organizers, the newspapers, but also the doctors, for example, and also the role of some important sporting events that have an international echo also outside Italy. However, in this first chapter, I also wanted to add a paragraph. I won't discuss it here, but about the sporting actors, international sporting institution and sporting actors, because I thought it was important for those who are not, who doesn't know too much about that. But in Redis, I think it's quite, it's not important to discuss about the role of international institutions such as IOC and International Sports Federation. The second chapter is more follows more a chronological approach, and I start in 1943 with the fall of Mussolini, and I look at the ambiguity of Italian sport under the co-belligerency, so to the fact that while the military allied play sports with Italian civilians, they didn't play sport until the end of the war with the Italian military, because formally the Italian military were not allied to them. They were co-belligerent. And so they couldn't play in the official inter-allied competition. And so this is an interesting aspect on how sport and politics deal. Then, of course, I look once after the liberation, so after the April 1945, on what I've called the strange quarantine of Italian sport. What I call also the silent exclusion of Italian sport. Why silent? Silent because in bilateral sports relationship, of course, you can decide your opponent. So if you don't play with Italy, it's not like a real exclusion. It's a choice, it's a legitimate choice. However, if we look at the international sport relationship after the Second World War, we see that there is an immediate restart of international activity, a huge number of international meetings. And in these international meetings, of course, there is no, I speak about Europe, of course, there is no Germany, but there is also no Italy, with one exception. The exception is Switzerland. Switzerland is the only country which play with Italy. And is not by chance, because Switzerland was also the only neighbor country which didn't broke the diplomatic relation with Italy. The other aspect is that this exclusion became more clear if we look at the International Federation. Of course, International Federation took more time to restart, but if in the IOC Italy was not excluded, because as we know, the decision in IOC was not political, was formally apolitical, was to decide to not recognize those the idea was not to invite to the 1948 Olympic Games those country which didn't have a national Olympic committee. So Germany and Japan, which were occupied, couldn't rebuild their national Olympic committee. Italy could maintain its national Olympic committee, which was rebuilt and formally defascistized. But if we look at the International Federation, we see four typologies four different approach toward Italy. We can see this non-exclusion without any consequence. And in this case, we generally, this happened generally when we had an international sports federation with Swiss leadership and with the Latin bloc in majority. Then we have a second type that is the non-exclusion because the sporting weight of Italy. So Italy was too important to be excluded. And this is only in two cases. The first one was fencing, because fencing without Italy and Hungary, that which were in the same situation, will be simply like leave the French play by themselves, more or less. If we look at the number of medals won at the Olympic Games by those three countries at the moment, were almost 90%. And the other one was car racing. Without Italy and Germany, like the impact of their absence, so Italian absence in car racing will be too much. So it was one reason why Italy was not excluded. The third typology is the exchange. Is a non-exclusion with an exchange. So for example, in the Motorcycle International Federation, we had an Italian president, Alberto Bonacossa. So he resigned, but Italy could maintain his position. And a similar situation we see in FIFA, where Italy could maintain his position, but the vice president, Mauro, went on congé. So had to leave for a couple of meetings and then could come back. But the last typology is the exclusion. So we have several federations in which Italy was suspended or excluded. We can see that the peace treaty was a kind of watershed. After the peace treaty, generally all the federation in which Italy was excluded reinsert Italy. But there were four international sport federation in which the exclusion lasted longer than February 1947. So these were ice skating, swimming, gymnastics, and tennis. And in order to favor the re-entering of Italy, also the IOC president entered in this diplomatic dispute and wrote to the president of these three of these four federations, because tennis was out of the Olympic movement, asking the re-enter of Italy. After the 1948 Olympic Games, Italy is fully legitimate in the international sports arena and can also start thinking to launch some bids. And in 1949, we'll win the Winter Olympic Games. By the time it has already started to host some minor European or World Championship. And in 1955, we'll be elected as the host of the 1960 Olympic Games. So this has been developed in the second chapter, of course, going in deep in some aspect that now I don't want to discuss here, but if you have any question, I can maybe discuss after. Just to say that the third chapter is dedicated to some case studies. I wanted to look on how the Cold War impacted the international activity of Italian sport. I wanted to look on how the Trieste case impacted the Italian sport. And in this aspect, I think those of you who were present to the first rallies can remember something, because it was my first presentation in the first rallies. But also, I really wanted to look at how some sporting crisis has entered the diplomatic arena. Because, of course, we know that international politics influence international sports. But it's also sometimes... when you look at diplomatic documents, it's very interesting to see how the diplomacy react when there is a simple sport crisis that has the potential to become a political crisis. And of course, in this period for Italy, the most important one is the decision of the two Italian cycling team involved in 1950 Tour de France to retire after an incident occurred to Bartali while he was climbing the Col d'Aspin, that he was beaten by French supporters. And of course, this is the biggest case, and it's interesting to see how both the French and the Italian diplomacy work together in order to avoid that this simple sporting problem could become a bigger problem at the international stage. But there are also some minor issues. Just one, for example, is the fact that while the Italian diplomacy was working in South America to ask for support, economical support, especially in Uruguay, Argentina, like this, the Italian football clubs were seeking the football market. They were looking for the best talent, and they were buying some football players, the best football players of these countries. And so it was very funny to read the ambassador, the Italian ambassador in Uruguay, asking to the president of the Italian committee to say, okay, for us it's quite complicated to ask support and money if our team buy their best player, because there is a problem. We don't seem that we are poor and we need help. But the answer was, sport and politics are separated. We cannot ask the teams. They are free to do what they want. And so this is one of the first problems that emerge between the sport movement and the political movement. Of course, is a minor issue, but I think it was important to tell in order to give some more flower of the research. I think I will conclude. I think that is not important now to go through the conclusion. I leave the floor to Fabienne. Just say a couple of quick thing that, of course, the international activities of the Italian sport was deeply influenced by the international politics. This I expected from the beginning. But then was interesting the fact that the Italian government didn't use sport as a political tool in foreign policy. It leave the initiative to the sports institution, with maybe one exception was in the Trieste case, while he supported the Italian team in Trieste, that Trieste at the moment was not formally Italy. But in general, he didn't have a proactive approach, but when it was needed, he react in support of the need of Italian sporting diplomacy. But this was also because for this early stage, the first years after the war, generally speaking, the Italian sporting actors, at least the official one, with the exception of WISP that I already mentioned, they were fully aligned with the Foreign Office doctrine, with the Foreign Office vision of politics. So thank you for the attention, and I'm looking forward to listen what Fabien has to add.